This is the NPR News Update. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. Coming up, two police officers are wounded during a shooting outside a city council meeting in the Twin Cities suburb of New Hope. Governor Dayton is proposing $10 billion in transportation spending, and Medtronic is now an Irish company. But what does that mean? It's Tuesday, January 27th. I'm John Wanamaker. Two police officers are recovering from injuries after a man allegedly shot at police outside of a New Hope City Council meeting last night. The man was shot and killed when officers on the scene opened fire. Sounds of gunfire sent council members ducking under desks. Peter Cox has more.
Just after two new officers were sworn into the New Hope Police Department last night, they left the council chambers. Video to stream on the city's website recorded city manager Kirk McDonald as he continued with the council's agenda.
The purchase of an electronic reader board sign.
Get down. Everybody get down.
That went right through the door.
Get down.
Somebody got shot.
Stay down.
The man telling people to get down is John Elder, a spokesman for the Minneapolis Police Department and a New Hope City Council member. The video shows him pulling out a gun and aiming it at the door. Hours later, Mike Carlson, chief deputy of the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, described what police think happened. Carlson says a man entered the Minneapolis suburb City Hall around 7:15 p.m., just after the officers were sworn in.
When the swearing-in ceremony was completed, the officers left the council chambers. At that point in time, an adult male engaged these officers and began firing at them. Two officers were struck by the gunfire. Other officers were able to return fire, subsequently killing the suspect.
The two wounded New Hope police officers were hospitalized and are expected to survive. They and the man killed were not identified. Mayor Kathy Hemken was in the council chambers when the shooting happened. She says it unfolded in a matter of seconds.
We heard the noise, a gun being shot. Then it was just get down, and that's just what we did.
She says Councilman Elder, along with Councilman Eric Lamley, a detective with the Richfield Police Department, kept the chamber safe as police outside secured the area. She says 10 minutes after the shooting, everyone in the chambers was escorted to the fire department. Hemken says she never felt unsafe with 15 to 20 officers on site, and she's pleased with how they responded.
I am so proud of my police force. This is a group of folks that they went from a joyous occasion to a very somber occasion in a matter of just seconds.
The Hennepin County Sheriff's Office is investigating the shooting, but they're not looking for any other suspects. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner will identify the man who died. With reporting from Reham Fesher, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Governor Mark Dayton has formally proposed a massive transportation plan that spends more than $10 billion over the next 10 years on roads, bridges, and transit. But Republicans and several interest groups say lawmakers should agree on the size of the problem before they raise taxes. And as Tom Scheck reports, there are some who say the Dayton administration is inflating the numbers on how much it will take to fix roads and bridges.
Flanked by his chief transportation aides, Dayton rolled out a proposal that increases the wholesale tax on gasoline, raises a half-cent sales tax in the metro area, and increases license tap fees. Dayton said the state's transportation system needs upkeep that can't be done without more money.
There's one solution, one real solution to our predicament, and that's to invest more money in repairs, improvements, and modernizations.
The Dayton plan would spend $6 billion on the state's roads and bridges, $2.3 billion on county, city, and township roads, and nearly $3 billion on transit across the state. Transportation Commissioner Charlie Zelli said he's basing the $6 billion in spending on roads and bridges on a 2012 report by a group called the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee. The committee was made up of elected officials, business, and labor leaders.
After careful analysis, 100% were in agreement that if we ignore this problem, we will leave a legacy of poor and crumbling transportation for future generations.
But contrary to what Zelli says, there was disagreement over the mission of the committee and whether its job was to outline the transportation needs of the state.
Need is a political term. The unmet need, when people say that, hang on to your wallets because it is the definition of whatever gets somebody elected.
That's Republican Mike Beard, who chaired the House Transportation Committee in 2011 and 2012. He was also a member of the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee. Beard says he thought the commission members were going to propose a lower figure for transportation needs until it was clear Republicans were going to lose control of the legislature after the 2012 election. Beard said other members of the committee then pushed for more road and bridge construction and transit spending.
I would contend that was the case, that we were going to come out with a little more manageable description of the problem until it was clear that we were no longer going to be the chairs and Republicans were not going to control the House and Senate, and it was going to be all Democrats everywhere all the time. And that's when I think the lid came off.
Beard, who retired from the legislature last year and now serves as a Scott County commissioner, said he thinks road and bridge construction could be done for a third of that $6 billion estimate. Another member of the committee, former Republican Senator Joe Gimsey, said it wasn't the committee's main job to figure out the transportation needs of the state. Instead, Gimsey said its goal was to find new ways to finance the system outside of hiking the gas tax and license tab fees.
I don't think that it met the original intent, or even came close to meeting the original intent of finding alternative ways of financing transportation. And, you know, we're right back to the traditional. That's disappointing to me.
Charlie Zelli, who served on the committee prior to becoming transportation commissioner, disputes the allegations that anybody inflated the numbers.
I actually thought most of the numbers were done toward the summer and the early fall, and then and the election was in November, and I didn't think it was that clear in my mind.
Transportation funding is the center of what is expected to be a session-long dispute between Dayton and House Republicans. The House Republican plan spends $750 million over the next 4 years for transportation projects. It does not raise taxes, but relies on part of the budget surplus and money already in the state transportation department's budget. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Also at the Capitol, the Minnesota House has passed a $17 million disaster relief package on a unanimous vote and sent it to the governor for his signature. Tim Pugmire has more on that.
Lawmakers worked quickly this month on the bill, which will help communities that were hit hard by storms and flooding last summer. Republican Representative Jim Knobloch of St. Cloud, the bill's chief sponsor, said the bill is primarily the state's match for federal money. He said it also relies on unspent money from past disasters. 47 counties and 3 tribal reservations sustained serious weather-related damage back in June. The Minnesota Senate passed the same bill last week. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Medtronic is now an Irish company. Yesterday, the medtech giant that started in a Minneapolis garage finalized its acquisition of medical product maker Covidien, transferring its legal headquarters to the Emerald Isle with a signature. The company says the $49.9 billion deal will benefit customers, patients, shareholders, and Minnesota as well. Martin Moylan has more.
The Irish High Court approved the deal, and Medtronic then completed remaining legal and other steps. In a statement, CEO Omar Ishrak said the acquisition, quote, marks a significant milestone in our industry, creating a company uniquely positioned to alleviate pain, restore health, and extend life for more patients around the world. The combined company will have about $27 billion in annual revenue and do business in more than 160 countries. Medtronic says it will rank number one or two in several key categories, from coronary stents and medical supplies to spine and diabetes products. One strategy lies at the heart of the deal.
Bigger is better.
Joanne Wench is an analyst with BMO Capital Markets.
I think they're going to be thought of less as a cardiology company and more as a broad-based, diversified healthcare provider or healthcare medical products company. Its peers are going to be less and less companies like Boston Scientific and St. Jude and more companies like Johnson & Johnson.
Medtronic says the two companies combined can eliminate $850 million in annual expenses. There have been no details about layoffs, but analysts expect cuts in human resources, administration, legal, and other departments. Jeff Windau is an analyst with Edward Jones.
There would definitely be looking at taking out some redundancies, and there's also some things that could be beneficial with their scale as far as, you know, purchasing and trying to get more volume and a lower price for the things that they currently buy.
Medtronic will keep its CEO and operational headquarters in Minnesota. But as an Irish company, Medtronic says it can now put billions of dollars in overseas profits to work in the U.S. without getting a big tax bill from Uncle Sam. That tax strategy helped fuel a backlash that extended even to the U.S. Treasury Department changing regulations in a bid to stymie so-called tax inversions. Some crumpled, but Medtronic forged ahead. The company has promised to invest $10 billion in the U.S. That includes adding 1,000 jobs in Minnesota, where Medtronic already has about 8,000 employees. Kevin Early is a portfolio manager with the Mars and Power investment firm. He says Medtronic has been very careful to cast Minnesota as a winner in the deal.
They wanted to make sure that this was a positive transaction for this area, with Minnesota being the headquarters.
With the added jobs and the state's tax revenue remaining the same or even rising, Governor Mark Dayton has deemed the Medtronic-Covidien deal to be a, quote, good package for Minnesota. Medtronic is not the first Minnesota company to move its legal headquarters address for tax purposes. 3D printer maker Stratasys is among them. But if Medtronic helped fuel the backlash against tax inversions, investors liked what they saw. The total package of the new deal grew to $49.9 billion from $42.9 billion because Medtronic's share price kept rising. Early of Mars and Power thinks the deal would be good for Medtronic and its shareholders.
The transaction gives them a lot more financial flexibility, and that financial flexibility is going to allow them to raise dividends over time, buy back more stock over time, which we also think is positive.
With Medtronic now an Irish company, Minnesota will lose a Fortune 500 company. But University of Minnesota management professor Miles Shaver says the state's economy and self-image shouldn't suffer.
I think we lose bragging rights if we just sort of point to the number of Fortune 500s. But, I don't think anybody's moving that big building from Fridley.
Or moving any of those other Medtronic properties and jobs out of the state. And that's the key for Minnesota with this deal, more paychecks and taxes into state coffers. On Medtronic's last day as a U.S. company, the firm's share price dropped nearly 2% to $75.59. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This is the NPR News Update. We come your way every day around noon. It's Minnesota's news on your schedule. The nation's number three cereal maker, Post Holdings, is buying Mom Brands. That's the Minnesota company best known for its Malto Meal Hot Cereal. Post is paying nearly $1.2 billion for the privately held company that has deep roots in Minnesota. Matt Sepik has more.
Like its much larger rival General Mills, Mom Brands has a long history in Minnesota. The company dates back to 1919 when Miller John Campbell took $900 he won playing poker and started a company to make a hot cereal. Malt-O-Meal, as he called it, would compete with the already popular Cream of Wheat, which got its start in North Dakota. 8 years later, the Campbell Cereal Company, as it was known then, moved into the old Ames Mill in Northfield. Mom Brands still makes its flagship item in that same facility on the Cannon River. Susan Garwood, executive director of the Rice County Historical Society, says the company has embraced Northfield's heritage by remaining downtown and continuing to use the mill.
Preserving that historic structure, that historic building, yet also maintaining its viable use for their hot cereal really speaks to the importance of the company to the community, I think.
Mom Brands also has a much larger production plant in Northfield where it makes a wide variety of ready-to-eat cold breakfast cereals, including Tutti Frutti's and Frosted Mini Spooners, lower-cost alternatives to Kellogg's Fruit Loops and Frosted Mini Wheats. Post says the deal will result in $50 million of, quote, cost synergies. No word on layoffs, but Post says it'll eliminate duplication in corporate functions and recalibrate production. Both of those moves could hit the approximately 1,000 employees who work at the cereal plants in Northfield and the corporate headquarters in Lakeville. In a conference call this morning, Post CEO Rob Vitale said acquiring Mom Brands will help Post solidify its position in the cereal business, especially the low-cost category of bagged cereals and store brands.
We become the leader in the value segment, so I think it gives us a much stronger, newer voice in the category and a significantly more relevant position within the overall category.
The move comes as cereal makers are struggling. General Mills has been cutting staff and shutting plants lately. Selling breakfast cereal is a highly competitive game. That's obvious from the vast panoply of offerings at every grocery store. Nevertheless, overall cereal sales have been flat in the last decade and a half as fast food joints, coffee shops, and other packaged foods all vie for your breakfast buck. Still, from 2001 to 2011, Mom Brands managed to more than double its sales. Vitale says the acquisition would give the combined business 16 of the top 50 cereal brands. Ken Shea, a food industry analyst at Bloomberg, says even though cereal is a well-established market, there are still opportunities to make money.
It's not growing much, but the economics are such that it still generates a decent return on investment for producers, so they're going to continue to do it. They're looking for as many ways to innovate as they can to reach new consumers. But it's just a tough, tough market. And so this consolidation here is consistent with other mature categories.
Shea says less competition could, in theory, lead to higher costs at the checkout. But he says consumers have become accustomed to bargains on cereals, so companies may be reluctant to hike prices. Post says it plans to close on its purchase of Mom Brands sometime between July and September of this year. Mom chairman and CEO Chris Nugent will stay on to lead the Mom Brands business. Investors love the deal. On a day when the major stock market indices were basically flat, Post Holdings shares jumped a whopping 18% to close at $48.83. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota House Speaker Kurt Dowd told gun owners yesterday that unlike his predecessor, he's on their side and will help them fight gun control measures. Dowd, a Republican from Crown, spoke outside the Capitol during a rally sponsored by two groups, the Minnesota Gun Owners Political Action Committee and the Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance. Dowd said the new Republican House majority will be more supportive than Democrats, whom he accused of trying to infringe on gun rights when they controlled the House for the past 2 years.
You've got a new Speaker of the House that's not going to spend his time strategizing how to infringe on your Second Amendment rights, but I'm going to stand with you to protect those rights. I'm a sportsman myself, and I have a permit to carry a handgun.
The last House Speaker, DFLer Paul Thiessen of Minneapolis, said there was no effort on his part to strategize any particular gun control legislation. He said he stopped one gun control measure from moving forward because it didn't have enough support to pass. A Minneapolis man has pleaded guilty to two sexual assaults committed in a downtown parking ramp, Brant Williams reports.
Prosecutors say 22-year-old Pijan Hodges pleaded guilty to attacking two women just hours apart one afternoon last October in the C Ramp, one of the large parking ramps near Target Center. The criminal complaint says Hodges pushed one of the women into her car and assaulted her in the back seat until witnesses called for help and chased him away. In a statement, Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman said Hodges will likely receive a 15-year sentence. A sentencing hearing has been scheduled for March. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And finally, doctors at Mayo Clinic in Rochester are using a medical device that normally treats Parkinson's disease and other neurological disorders on two patients. The experimental treatment involves deep brain stimulation that delivers mild electrical pulses and records the brain's reaction. Elizabeth Baer reports the cases are helping doctors learn more about how the brain reacts to epilepsy.
Sherry Finstead has spent the past 9 years waiting for her next seizure.
I could go weeks without having them, but once I would have seizures, it was unknown how quickly or frequently that they would take place and how impacting that they would be.
Finstead is 32, a social worker from Fargo. She tried medication and diet changes, but her seizures continued. Surgery to remove the area of the brain causing the seizures was the next option. But Finstead's seizures originate in multiple parts of her brain, and the risky surgery could have resulted in memory loss. So after exhausting all of her options, Sherry Finstead became one of just two people implanted with a device made by Medtronic. It delivers electrical pulses deep into her brain's hippocampus, where her seizures come from.
Hi. Hello.
She was back at Mayo recently for her first follow-up visit after the surgery in October. Finstead tells neurologist Matt Stead how she's been feeling. Since the surgery, she's had dizziness and headaches, but just one seizure.
My interpretation is probably those are maybe auras. Mm-hmm. And technically an aura is the very beginning of a seizure, but it sounds like maybe they're getting aborted. So
I might start crying. this could be working.
Electrodes inside her brain are connected to wires that go down the side of her neck to two stimulators similar to a pacemaker. Each one is about the size of a small deck of cards. Doctors implanted them just below her collarbones. Inside each device, there's a battery that supplies energy and circuits that provide stimulation and sensing. The Food and Drug Administration approved a similar device in 2013, but Stead says the system they're using on Finstead allows doctors to record the brain's activity while the stimulation is occurring.
And so that will allow us, hopefully, to understand better what patterns and types of stimulation are most likely to suppress their propensity towards seizures.
The stimulation is constant, sending low-frequency signals to Finstead's brain.
I cannot tell that the device is on. I have absolutely no idea when one side of this device is on and the other side isn't. And it's constantly going.
Pacemakers have had the capability to sense cardiac signals for several decades. But Tim Dennison, a senior engineering director at Medtronic, says it's been harder to replicate that in the brain.
One of the things that's interesting about the signals in the brain is that they're about 1,000 times smaller than what we see off a typical pacemaker. And so it's a real engineering challenge to get the resolution to those signals, and especially to try to sense those small signals in the presence of stimulation.
Medtronic is providing the devices at no cost, and Finstead's insurance covers surgery costs. Dennison says the device is meant to be a general investigational tool for researchers to explore how stimulation might be used on a variety of diseases, not just epilepsy.
In fact, we started out making sure we could cover our base therapies today of Parkinson's disease, tremor, and dystonia. And then researchers such as those at the Mayo Clinic are looking at expanding it into other indications such as epilepsy.
This latest deep brain stimulation system doctors are using for Sherry Finstead is still in its infancy and will need years of clinical studies and FDA approval for any broader use. Elizabeth Baer, Minnesota Public Radio News, Rochester.
And that's the NPR News update for Tuesday, January 27th. I'm John Wanamaker. Thanks for listening.